It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we are in midsummer. This is the season when tall white flowers and tall yellow flowers begin to dominate. And we will get to all of that in just a moment. But for some of you who were listening last week, you may recall that I was reporting from the Lake Nipigon area of Canada. And I had not had the opportunity by Tuesday morning to go out and wander about in the countryside of Canada and check out the soils and the plants there. But I did manage last week on Tuesday and again on Wednesday to get out and do a little walking in the country and checking out some of the landforms there. And the results were sort of what I expected in some ways, but other ways they were absolutely mind-blowing. And one of the things that was mind-blowing is, first of all, there are no deer in that area. And I knew that immediately because in one spot, the whole forest was carpeted with Canada yew. And Canada yew is a plant that you can find here in northern Minnesota, but it's mostly on isolated islands or on tiny spots in the northeast where deer do not habitate. And so Canada yew, the other thing that was there present with the Canada yew was young cedar. And you, if you live here in northern Minnesota, you know that the deer will eat any cedar that they can reach. And that is why when you go on some of these lakes and you go to some of the lower areas, you get to those cedar swamps, it looks like somebody's gone through and trimmed them all up to a certain height. Well, that height is exactly how high a deer can reach while standing on its hind legs. And so Canada yew and regeneration cedar told me that there were no deer in the area. The other thing that told me there were no deer in the area is that there were no deer trails at all. I have not walked in forest that thick in Minnesota that I can recall. They were absolutely choked, and to get through them, it was an ordeal, and it was well worth the effort because it was amazing, but it was quite an ordeal. In the area, in the area where I found the Canada yew, the soils were soft and spongy. The duff layer was deep, and these are the rotted. The forest around it was mostly birch and aspen. There were basically, on the tree scale, there were four trees up there. There was balsam, spruce, probably white spruce, aspen and birch. And those were the four main trees. The forest with the aspen had Canada yew underneath and had these cedars kind of along the edges, but deep in the forest, it was just aspen. And a lot of it was blown down, just mature aspen that had just fallen over from just old age. And so walking was incredibly difficult. You'd walk 12 feet, climb over an aspen log. You'd walk another 10 feet and climb over another aspen log, and then another, and then another. So it was a good workout, but it was really interesting. And among the flowers that I encountered there, I think the one that caught my eye the most, and this one I was walking up, I had started off on a riverbank, and I climbed a beaver trail into the woods. And about halfway up this hill, probably a 10-foot high hill, I ran into a little copse of young balsams, and while I pushed the branches aside to get through, I noticed on the ground a little plant called naked miterwort. Now, naked miterwort grows here in Minnesota, and it is a lovely little flower. It grows primarily on the edges of swamps here in Minnesota. In this case, it was on a hillside on high ground, but it was unmistakable, and get out your phone and key in naked miterwort or Mitella nuda, And look at the flower. You're going to see five green sepals. You're going to think they're petals, but they are sepals. The petals are these five little wispy threads that have some 9 to maybe 11 little points on them. And those are the petals of this little naked mitrewort. It is the most amazing little plant. And then when it comes to fruit, you'll have this little cup-shaped object with 3 or 4 little black seeds in it, and it's quite lovely. So the naked mitrewort, and then another plant that I saw up there that's common around here, not common, but can be found around here in the right situations, is pyrola, round-leaved pyrola, which is a beautiful little flower that stands about 8 or 10 inches high. Sometimes it's called shin leaf. It has a little downward-facing column of flowers, maybe 6 to 8 of these little flowers that always face the ground. And if you want to look at them, you either have to pick the plant or you have to lay down on the ground and look up. They're quite lovely, actually. The other thing that was kind of startling up there is that the lilacs were still in bloom. End of June, and the lilacs were still blooming in the Thunder Bay and north and northeast from there. What else? Well, there was Canada Mayflower and starflowers and blue bead lilies and the regular stuff around here. I mentioned the soft, spongy duff layer and no angleworms. Angleworms, where there are angleworms, they climb up and they chew up those decaying leaves and they mix that soil very rapidly. And so around here where there are angleworms and you're walking, the soil's going to be hard. But up there, no angleworms. You walked on that ground. It was like kind of walking on a soft mattress. It just gave under your feet. It was quite nice. And finally, two notes about Lake Nipigon. One, at night, this lake is huge. It's probably 15 Lake Mille Lacs. It's that big. The bay that I was in was probably, this is one bay of the lake. It was probably 10 miles wide and 7 miles deep. By deep, I mean on a map. It was 10 miles north to south and 7 miles east to west. Let's put it that way, because it wasn't 7 miles deep. It was a couple hundred feet deep, but deep enough. No lights. There wasn't a light anywhere to be seen on that whole lake at night. And the other thing is, the whole time I was there, I did not see a jet contrail, nor did I see an airplane flying overhead. Just absolutely not that far away, but truly a remote location. So that was Canada. I had a great time. Glad to be back here in Minnesota and looking at the sort of things that are happening here, which include a little yellow flower that you're going to find down around the edges of lakes called tufted loosestrife. It's going to look like a fuzzy little yellow gumdrop. It's just a little round, fuzzy flower, tufted loosestrife. And while you're looking at that, you're going to see another kind of a big purple flower. And that one is marsh cinquefoil. The black-eyed Susans began to bloom this last week, and that was right on schedule. I guess it was 3 days late, but who's keeping track? Well, I guess I am. Anyway, the black-eyed Susans are blooming. Blue flag, the wild iris, is probably at its peak of bloom right now. Let's see, among the other flowers that I ran into, that blue flag, fly honeysuckle fruits are formed and red. Red elderberry, the fruits are red. Always get a lot of questions about red elderberry. I think last year I talked a little bit about red elderberry. I have not tried this. You can cook them and separate the seeds from the pulp, and it's supposed to be edible. But to be honest with you, last year I recounted an account by a woman who was selling red elderberries, and her neighbor had come back to her and said, these made me sick. And she, because she was a conscientious person, she put a quarter cup of red elderberries into her oatmeal. She tried to eat the red elderberries straight, and she couldn't. They weren't palatable enough. So she put them in her oatmeal and ate them that way. A half hour later, she had a stomach upset, and for 24 hours, she was really, really, really sick, vomiting and diarrhea and all kinds of bad side effects. So, but she ate them raw and with the seeds in them. I personally, no thank you. And I feel the same way about a lot, like choke cherries. People eat choke cherries. Choke cherries, to me, they coat my mouth with a kind of a waxy, astringent feeling. I don't eat choke cherries. I know that you can make choke cherry wine. I know that you can make choke cherry jam. You add enough sugar to it, it becomes palatable. Well, you know what? Just give me the sugar and skip those berries. I'm not interested in something that's not palatable right off the plant, you know? Give me a blueberry, a raspberry, a strawberry, a blackberry, something that I know I can pick and throw in my mouth and eat and enjoy. That's me. That's only me. If you like them, eat them. But as far as I'm concerned, especially in the case of red elderberries, no thank you. And here's the thing. Blue-bead lily, by the way, the berries are forming. They're green right now. But they are the same as the red elderberry, same in the sense that you can't eat them. They won't kill you, so you can eat them, but they will not be good for you. All of these plants have chemistry designed to get that seed through you as fast as possible. And in the case of a bird, that's not so bad. But in the case of a human, you know, you're either going to vomit it back up or you're going to have diarrhea very quickly after you eat them. So my opinion, and only my opinion, I don't eat them. Help yourself. that's all I'm going to say about that. I did make a note of the fact that I was out with my good friend Craig Bowron yesterday on Hatch Lake, and we saw a pair of loons with a pair of chicks, and they were diving and coming up and feeding the little babies. And these little babies were like the size of the mouse on your computer, just little black fuzzballs. But they were right there with mom and dad, and they would bring up a fish and I suppose masticate it and then feed it to them. They were eating and feeding, and it was quite fun to watch. The bald eagle in the nest by my house is now nearly the size of an adult. It stands on the edge of the nest and begs for food. And it is quite a large bird. I have every confidence that, it's large enough now that no predator is likely to overtake it, at least not as long as it stays in the nest or off of the ground. It's a big bird now, and I'm excited about that. While I was walking in the woods this last week, I saw two things that were notable. One, spittlebugs, and you know the spittlebug. It's a little, you're going to look at the plant, you're going to see a little gob of spit on the leaf. What's happened there is one of the spittlebugs has climbed the plant, turned itself upside down, so its head is down and its butt is up, and it puts its mouth parts in the plant and starts sucking out the plant's juices. And then it wiggles its butt back and forth very rapidly, and that creates that little gob of spit that you see on the plant, which is its home. It gives the little bug a little safety. And nothing wrong with picking off that gob of spit and just wiping across your fingertips and finding the little bug that's inside. And when you do, you can put it back on the plant if you want, or yeah, I don't care. You can eat it if you want. Probably won't make you sick. Probably not as bad for you as red elderberry. The other thing that I saw while I was in the woods was the first ebony jewel wing damselfly of the year. These are large, black-winged damselflies with a slow kind of a fluttery flight. They are beautiful, and if you get a chance, the black wings will attract your eye, but the body is iridescent green or blue. It just glows in the sunlight. It is absolutely unbelievably beautiful. Ebony jewel wings. They only live for 2 to 2.5 weeks, 15 to maybe 17, 18 days as an adult. The males will find the females. They'll do a little display, and the female and the male will mate, and then the female will go and lay her eggs on vegetation, floating mats of vegetation in a slow-moving stream, and then you will have more ebony jewel wings next year. The females can be told from the males by the presence of a little white dot. It's called a stigma, and it's out on the ends of the forewings. So the ebony jewel wing has four wings. That's F-O-U-R, four wings. And on the forewings, F-O-R-E, the front wings, there are these two little white dots, one on each wing. And that will tell you whether you're looking at a female or a male. The females have the white spots. That's the Phenology Show for this week. Thanks for tuning in. By all means, if you have observations you'd like to share, I'd like to hear from you.
That's Phenology. You can learn more by signing up for that Season Watch newsletter written by our Phenology coordinator, Charlie Mitchell. The sign-up is available very easy at kaxe.org. A lot of cool stuff she shares with us there.